3. Womb of Redemption. The world of human life is now the problem. Guided by the practical judgment of the kings and the instruction of the priests of the dice of divine revelation, the field of consciousness so contracts that the grand lines of the human comedy are lost in a welter of cross purposes. Men's perspectives become flat, comprehending only the light-reflecting, tangible surfaces of existence. The vista into depth closes over. The significant form of the human agony is lost to view. Society lapses into mistake and disaster. The little ego has usurped the judgment seat of the self. This is, in myth, a perpetual theme. In the voices of the prophets, a familiar cry. The people yearn for some personality who, in a world of twisted bodies and souls, will represent again the lines of the incarnate image. We are familiar with the myth from our own tradition. It occurs everywhere, under a variety of guises. When the Herod figure, the extreme symbol of the misgoverning, tenacious ego, has brought mankind to the nadir of spiritual abasement, the occult forces of the cycle begin of themselves to move. In an inconspicuous village, the maid is born who will maintain herself undefiled of the fashionable errors of her generation, a miniature in the midst of men of the cosmic woman who was the bride of the wind. Her womb, remaining fallow as the primordial abyss, summons to itself, by its very readiness, the original power that fertilized the void. Now on a certain day, while Mary stood near the fountain to fill her pitcher, the angel of the Lord appeared unto her, saying, "Blessed art thou, Mary, for in thy womb thou hast prepared a habitation for the Lord. Behold, light from heaven shall come and dwell in thee, and through thee shall shine in all the world." The story is recounted everywhere, and with such striking uniformity of the main contours that the early Christian missionaries were forced to think that the devil himself must be throwing up mockeries of their teaching wherever they set their hand. Fray Pedro Simon reports in his Noticias Historiales de las Conquistas de Tierra Firme en las Indias Occidentales, Cuenca, 1627, that after work had been begun amongst the peoples of Tunja and Sogamoso in Colombia, South America,
"The demon of that place began giving contrary doctrines, and, among other things, he sought to discredit what the priest had been teaching concerning the incarnation, declaring that it had not yet come to pass, but that presently the Son would bring it to pass by taking flesh in the womb of a virgin of the village of Huachata, causing her to conceive by the rays of the sun while she yet remained a virgin. These tidings were proclaimed throughout the region, and it so happened that the headman of the village named had two virgin daughters, each desirous that the miracle should become accomplished in her. These then began going out from their father's dwellings and garden enclosure every morning at the first peep of dawn, and mounting one of the numerous hills about the village, in the direction of the sunrise, they disposed themselves in such a way that the first rays of the sun would be free to shine upon them. This going on for a number of days, it was granted the demon, by divine permission, whose judgments are incomprehensible, that things should come to pass as he had planned, and in such fashion that one of the daughters became pregnant, as she declared, by the son. 9 months, and she brought into the world a large and valuable hakuata, which, in their language, is an emerald. The woman took this, and, wrapping it in cotton, placed it between her breasts, where she kept it a number of days, at the end of which time it was transformed into a living creature, all by order of the demon. The child was named Goranchacho, and he was reared in the household of the head man, his grandfather, until he was some 24 years of age."
Then he proceeded in triumphant procession to the capital of the nation, and was celebrated throughout the provinces as the child of the sun. Hindu mythology tells of the maiden Parvati, daughter of the mountain king Himalaya, who retreated into the high hills to practice very severe austerities. A tyrant titan named Taraka had usurped the mastery of the world, and, according to the prophecy, only a son of the high god Shiva could overthrow him. Shiva, however, was the pattern god of yoga, aloof, alone, indrawn in meditation. It was impossible that Shiva should ever be moved to beget a son. Parvati determined to change the world situation by matching Shiva in meditation. Aloof, alone, indrawn into her soul, she too fasted naked beneath the blazing sun, even adding to the heat by building four additional great fires to each of the four quarters. The handsome body shriveled to a brittle construction of bones, the skin became leathery and hard, her hair stood matted and wild, the soft, liquid eyes burned. One day, a Brahmin youth arrived and asked why anyone so beautiful should be destroying herself with such torture. "My desire," she replied, "is Shiva, the highest object. Shiva is a god of solitude and unshakable concentration. I, therefore, am practicing these austerities to move him from his state of balance and bring him to me in love." "Shiva," the youth said, "is a god of destruction. Shiva is the world annihilator. Shiva's delight is to meditate in burial grounds amidst the reek of corpses. There he beholds the rot of death, and that is congenial to his devastating heart. Shiva's garlands are of living serpents. Shiva is a pauper, furthermore, and no one knows anything of his birth." The virgin said, "He is beyond the mind of such as you, a pauper, but the fountainhead of wealth, terrifying, but the source of grace. Snake garlands or jewel garlands he can assume or put off at will. How should he have been born when he is the creator of the uncreated? Shiva is my love." The youth thereupon put away his disguise and was Shiva.